Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2011. Lecture 19, delivered on April 12, 2011. The title of this lecture is Common Stock.
Today, Common Stock. This lecture is about the end of the new material before your exam, which is a week from Thursday. Now, Tuesday we will review the next class 2 days from now. I suppose I should just say you don't have to come since I don't have any new material, but what the hell, I'll think of something. For Thursday. Because we'll review on Tuesday of next week, a week from today, and then you'll have your exam too on Thursday. But 2 days from now, I'll probably do working capital management, although I'm not sure I'll put that on exam too. It'll be on the final. Yes, of course there will be. I should point out one thing. There is an error in the syllabus as to when the final exam is. The final exam in this class is on Tuesday of final exams week from 3:10 until 5:10, right here in this room. So be sure to come here early and often on that day so that we can have one last blowout. Yeah. Say that again. You have to talk to me about it specifically and give me the classes. We have an exception rule for a certain number of exams. So just approach me on that individually. But we are approaching the end of our rainbow here as a happy family. And so as we come to the end of this semester, I bring you to Common Stock. Ownership in a corporation. Now, stock, common stock, can be in a closely held corporation. There wouldn't be as many shareholders as could possibly be the case in a public corporation. But common stock represents real ownership, the residual claim on the assets of the corporation. It represents the voting power of the corporation to decide the fate of the corporation. In reality, that fate is determined as to some extent by forces other than just the shareholders operating through their votes in the board of directors. The debt holders do have say in shaping policies in other words, the debt holders will say, you must do these things and maintain certain types of procedures in some cases before they will lend the corporation money. So the idea that the shareholders have absolute control is not always the case. Here's the thing. Well, let me give you a couple of basics. I always assume that people know these kinds of things, and it's not really always the case. First of all, the shareholders vote for a board of directors. Now, that board of directors, its composition is determined by a document called the bylaws of the corporation. These are created in the context of the origination of the corporation. Now, the bylaws cover all kinds of essentials of the corporation's life. They'll determine even down to what the stock certificates look like sometimes. But they will certainly define the board of directors' positions. Who will be the chairman, what will be the duties of the chairman, the treasurer, the secretary, how many board members there will be, what constitutes a named position as opposed to a member at large of the board of directors, inside directors, outside directors. These are all laid out in this document called the bylaws. And I remember some of the corporations that I dealt with when I was a consultant. Those bylaws were written like in the 1930s in some cases. They were deep, thick documents just detailing all of these things about the corporation. So whenever there was a question at a board meeting, we always had the bylaws there because usually the bylaws, we could go in there and say, oh, well, that's how that works. Okay, it's specified there. These are the rules that govern the macro organization of the corporation. And so when the shareholders vote, they vote for the board of directors. Their votes are cast, and there is oftentimes what is called a slate of directors that vote for this slate with your votes. Now, sometimes you'll have a dissident group that will propose a different slate, will vote for this slate. Sometimes you'll have a takeover company that will say, we want you to vote our slate in, and we will make things much better for you, something like that. Oftentimes, shareholders who hold minor positions, small positions, will get what is called a proxy in the mail. It says, sign this, and then we will vote your shares, some interest group, some bigger group, oftentimes sponsored by the board of directors. We're sending you a proxy, and then we'll vote your shares, and we'll conveniently vote for us. You will have, as an alternative, sometimes you'll have a competing proxy. Please, instead of signing the proxy that was sent to you by the existing board's people, please sign ours and give us your shares to vote for this time. And oftentimes in a case like that, I've gotten color-coded proxies. In one case, I got three different proxy cards of different colors representing different groups. There was the inside group, and then there was a predator, and then there was, I can't remember what the third group was. I think it was just odd people who said, enough of all of this stupidity, we're going to take over. But the proxy statement, normally you would sign it just because you don't have the time to vote your own, you don't have the inclination to study the issues that are before the board of directors or study the board of directors to see whether they're worth voting for or not. A lot of people sign those. But always just kind of have a look at it, see what you're signing. Are you signing for a slate that has drilled the company into the ground? Are you signing for a slate of directors who are constantly rubber stamping insane compensation packages for the executives who've been screwing up for year after year? Look at the proxy statement. If you want to go to an annual shareholders meeting and speak your piece, do so. Remember that in Robert's Rules of Order, as in most rules of order, any rules of order that would be in play at a shareholders meeting, the minority has the right to speak. The majority will rule, but the minority has the right to speak. And I've known times, I've seen dissidents who went to shareholder meetings and said, look, you're going to win. You've got the proxy votes. You've got your inside shares. You're going to win, but I'm going to have my say. And it got very uncomfortable. But what was really interesting was one case stands out in my mind. That very large room, this woman had said her piece. She said, you keep giving these incredible salaries to these people who year over year are making a mess and losing money. And I'm sick of it. And you would not believe how many people in that room stood up and applauded her for that. So you remember that change happens usually not with victory, but with just getting your ass kicked. And of course, what she had to say, what a lot of us there wanted to say about how we wanted this board of directors to either get off its fat ass and start putting people in the top executive ranks who could turn the corporation around, or we were going to find a way to get other directors in there if we could. Sometimes it takes that to start a process. As time goes on, you will find that there are larger and larger shareholder blocks that carry sentiments that might be similar to yours. The majority is not always right in shareholder matters, just like it's not always right in political matters. The majority can just go with the flow, sign the proxy statement year over year. Oh man, that stock price sucks year over year. And there, you know, you've just got to start saying something somewhere about this. And eventually larger blocks of shareholders will start to step up to the plate and start saying they're having their say too. Some of the issues that are obviously on the table these days is executive compensation. We pay executives in this country ridiculously high salaries for, in some cases, disastrous results. And we just keep doing it over and over and over again. In any job that you would do, and you, and all of you in this room, and me, if I sucked the way they do in many corporations in America, we would be fired. But that's not how it works in the good old boy network. Another issue that is on the table, as shareholders, that you want to look at over time is the influence of the Wall Street people, the Wall Street fund managers. Most corporations are so scared of those people, they'll dance to anything those Wall Street fund managers tell them. We want more layoffs. We want more this. We want more that. We want this to happen. And the people inside the company will just jump. They are scared to death that those fund managers aren't going to buy their shares or that they are going to dump their shares. That's an issue that's going to have to be dealt with as time goes on. We want to try to get boards of directors that are less responsive about share price, and more responsive about shareholder value. Never mind the stakeholder crap. That's just pop academia and all that. And that idiotic stakeholders are all over the place. It's not just the shareholders. No, the shareholders are the only ones that matter. Because it is the shareholders that vote you in, vote you out. They decide whether you have a job or not. That's who matters in a corporation, not the stakeholders, the employees, Mother Earth, and all that kind of stuff. It's the shareholders. Don't let anyone tell you differently. If one of your professors says stakeholders, you tell them the Professor C said that's bullshit. And then when that professor comes to me and says, did you say that was bullshit? I'll say, that's a lying person. I want to set the stage for this because common stock really isn't that complicated. Now, they do this, some formulas in the book about calculating the majority, how many shares are required to do certain things. I don't care about that. You've seen stock, how we price it, common stock that is new issue, common stock that is old issue. We already did that in the course. Nothing I could tell you would be different for now. If you remember what I've taught you in this course, Finance 240, FIL 240, you go on to FIL 241, where everyone says it's a real hard, they're doing exactly what I've told you. They're just doing more of it, and they're trying to convince you that it's harder. It's the same thing. So what I've told you about stock, common stock, the formulas for pricing, for finding the cost of existing equity, the cost of new equity, I've already given you all of that. That having been said, the issues with common stock are old and new, and that's what I'm laying out for you. Boards of directors tend to be unresponsive to the minority shareholders, the shareholders who are not the majority of the power of the corporation. This is, in some ways, it's realistic. You have shareholders who are stupid as bricks. You don't want to be responsive to some idiot who just picked up a couple of shares and wants to have a say at your shareholders' meeting. But at the same time, there can be an institutional rigidity in a board of directors that keeps doing the same things over and over again despite the lackluster or bad results that come from doing those same things over and over again. That's the balancing act that you have to do in your work in a corporation. You have to be responsive to the shareholders, but you can't let just willy-nilly shareholder interests get in the way of progress. It's a difficult thing to do. Many corporations have a majority of shares held on the inside or by a group that has been there since Jesus walked the earth. And they are not going to leave until Jesus returns, and then he'll have to whip them out. The other times, what can happen is you have change happens, and it's not good change. Example would be, for example, and then sometimes it depends upon whom you talk with about it. For example, when Hewlett-Packard went through its quote-unquote merger a few years back, the Packard family was just absolutely outraged by what was happening. They had lost majority control some years before. They were not able to stop what was happening. Their bitterness was on a couple of levels. They felt that the Hewlett-Packard brand, the Hewlett-Packard name, was something special that bringing it into the mix of modern corporations that merge and diverge and all of that was so inappropriate to the aegis of Hewlett-Packard. They also felt quite bitter because they saw an inside play by in the executive ranks that was brought in to work on building the company and instead got into bed with the predator company to take out the takeover company. They felt that was part of it. And in the end, Hewlett-Packard is quite successful now. You see the products everywhere. But there's still a lot of bitterness in the Packard family and the people who knew Hewlett-Packard as the fabulous company it once was before it turned to a mass consumer market kind of company. You get different opinions about whether or not change is good and whether or not it is good when an old inside group loses its majority control over a corporation, as happens more often than not. The board of directors has different named positions, like the president. Sometimes they call it the president or the chairman of the board. And then you can have you'll have a treasurer, a secretary, and members at large. You might have a couple of other named positions. But they are responsible in their position. They are in a fiduciary responsibility. They have fiduciary responsibility to see to it that the shareholders' interests are primary. In their fiduciary role, they will hire the executive managers of the corporation, the CEO, the CFO, the COO. Those top executive positions will be determined by the board of directors. Who's in those positions, their compensation levels, those kinds of matters. The board of directors makes other decisions too, but those are their most crucial decisions in terms of shareholder value. So when you vote that slate of directors, you are to a very large extent deciding on the executive management team that will be in place. You are also deciding on, in a very real sense, on their compensation levels, on whether their compensations will be connected to their outcomes. To the extent that you are voting for the board of directors, you are also voting for whether or not that executive management team is dedicated to maximizing your shares value. Know this, when companies issue common stock, we call it a public offering. Public corporations do public offerings. When a company makes its first offering of common stock, that's called its IPO, its initial public offering. That's when we say the company goes public. Now, in other courses, I would teach you the details of going public. I used to do it in this class, but most people fell asleep. I hated the snoring. So I won't fatigue you with that. But in the process of going public, the company can either try to sell the stock itself, which is very rare except with small companies like the ones I consulted for. Most companies will go through an investment bank. An investment bank will set up a syndicate of investment banks that will buy the shares that are being issued directly from the corporation. And then that syndicate will sell the shares from its portfolio. So if you have a firm commitment underwriting, there is an investment banking house that has, either on its own or more likely through a syndicate, made the agreement with the issuing company, we will buy this offering out. You don't have to worry about that. You will get your money, and then we will sell the stock on our own tab. They will hit you for a fee. You remember when we did those formulas, that flotation cost? That's it, right there. So if your stock is selling for $50 a share, you want to issue, let's say, 1 million shares. You aren't going to get, in a firm commitment underwriting, you aren't going to get $50 million as the corporation. The investment banking house is going to say, we're going to give you $46 million. Why 46? Because the flotation costs will add up to about 8% of the offering. 8% of 50 is $4 million. So the company will not get $50 million, it will get $46 million. That's why the cost of new equity is stupid. It is the highest cost of component cost of capital there is. So why would any company issue new common stock? Well, we saw some of the reasons. One would be for capital projects, where they had already borrowed so much money that their cost of debt capital was on the upswing. That's a reason. There are bad reasons for issuing common stock, but know this. Issuing common stock to raise capital is expensive. It is the highest, generally speaking, the highest component cost of capital. You saw it when we did those, remember that sheet? You went through debt, your first level, debt, your second level, preferred stock if you did that one, existing common, and then the last one, the highest one, was that new issue equity. Yeah, that stuff, it can make your back leg thump. You know, you're getting into costs of equity above 20%, costs of capital, a component cost of capital above 20% in some cases. In some of the cases that I did, it was well way above that. But, so why would you do it? If it's that expensive and debt isn't that expensive, why would you ever do it? The first reason, and I've already gone through this, is it might be, the book goes through some reasons that... There's controversy in what the book's saying. But here's the thing. When you borrow money, you have to pay the interest on it. You have to pay the debt off. I mean, it's a pain in the ass. I mean, go figure. Lenders want you to pay them back? Stupid people. But you do. I mean, and if you don't, those lenders can and will take you to court. It's just a machine. They'll just walk right into the court. Your Honor, shut this corporation down, liquidate it, and give us the carcass. And you would have to say, I need to invoke Chapter 13, and the court needs to protect me from the debtors doing this while we work something out. It would be awful. So if you don't want to owe the kind of people who could shut you down, you issue common stock. Because the shareholders can't shut you down. You never have to pay them off. Stock is forever. And you don't have to pay them any interest. Or in other words, you don't have to pay them a dividend. Sure, they'll bitch. Sure, they'll knock your stock price down selling it. All those bad things will happen. but they won't end your corporation. You can shut them up forever. You see, here's the thing about that, is that when shareholders have problems with you, their first venue is the shareholders meeting, or proxying to a group that will clean house or do something different. You've got these awful little law firms out there that do shareholder derivative lawsuits, and they've gotten so bad, sometimes those law firms will just send a letter threatening to sue, and corporations will send them money to shut them up. But, and so there is that possibility that the shareholders could be pissed off enough that they'd go to one of these shareholder derivative lawsuit specialty law firms and kick your ass. Notwithstanding, or setting aside that possibility, the shareholders can't do a whole lot to you. If you don't send them their dividend checks, if your stock price is falling, they're going to be angry, but they can't destroy your corporation. They simply can't, not like debt holders can. That's the best reason in the world for you to have to issue equity, because especially if your prospects are not good for a few years, you know it's going to take some time to get your feet under you, to get your revenue stream stable and growing and all of those good things, then it's better to have shareholders and just weather their mouths and their threats and their lawyers threatening to shareholder derivative lawsuits than it is to go into the debt realm, where if you don't pay them, they will bring out their fangs and rip your throat out. So that's the best reason in the world for issuing stock instead of raising capital through debt. Notwithstanding the high price of new issue equity, that's a darn good reason. So if you don't want the possibility of getting destroyed, issue the common stock. It's expensive. Now, going a little bit further into this, there are all kinds of animals that are variations on common stock. In other courses you will take, because you're all going to major in finance now, or not. In other courses, you'll see that there are securities that are backed by stock. For example, there are securities called options. There are two flavors, call options and put options, that you can use so that you can essentially bet on stock. There's also ways that I would teach you in a little bit more advanced course, how you can use options and stock together to lock in a gain on stock so that you will not lose some upstroke in the stock's value. You won't gain any more if the upstroke continues, but you won't lose. You can lock in your win if that's what you want to do. So these options are out there. They are backed by stock. I told you about ETFs, which are bundles of stock, essentially, and they simply trade like a stock. They're a wonderful alternative to the mutual fund if you don't like the fact that mutual funds are difficult to get out of except during windows or to shift your funds around in. There are also animals called warrants. Now, I used warrants several times when I designed offerings. As a matter of fact, the way a warrant works is it gives the holder of the warrant the right to purchase a share of stock if the stock hits a certain value. Now, understand, let me put this in practical terms, why this would be useful by giving you sort of a fuzzy version of one that I did. I had a corporation that wanted to raise some money. It was not huge. It was a couple of million dollars. Their stock price just sucked. I mean, their stock price was, on a good day, it was a dollar. So in order to raise, let's say, $5 million, they would have had to issue 5 million shares. The insiders had only 4 million shares. The insiders had only 4 million shares. So to issue 5 million, the owners, the insiders, the ones who created the corporation, would have lost control. Now, it was going to be difficult because we were not going to get that stock price up. But we could delay the loss, the dilution of ownership control to some extent. And here's what we designed. It was called it's called a unit offering. You buy one share of stock, and then if you buy that share of stock, you also get two warrants. One strikes at $2, the other strikes at $4. And you get all of this for a $2.25 offering price on the stock. Now, you understand how that works. Let me go through that again. You buy one of these units for $2.25. You're going to get a share of stock. Yeah, I know it's only worth a dollar. But you also get two warrants. One of them gives you the right to buy a share of stock. Was it? Is it $2? I think it was $2. $2, and you get to buy it, no matter how high the price goes, you get to buy it at $2. And then if the stock price, you get to buy another warrant at $4. So you understand that an investor, a prospective investor, he'll immediately get a share of stock, a share of common stock, and then he will also... Let's say the stock price goes to $3. He's got a little certificate in his hand that says, you can buy from the corporation a share of stock for $2. So you see there wouldn't be immediate value in it, but there would be value down the road in it. And then if our company stock does really well, you can buy a share of stock at $4. So if our stock went to $10, you can buy a share of our stock from us for $4. That's you see the idea of how warrants work? They're like you can strike on them whenever you want, but when you would strike is if the price goes above what you'd have to pay for the warrant. So you could buy one warrant at $2. So obviously, if the price of the stock goes anywhere above $2, you would strike on that warrant A, on the A warrant, and then the warrant B, it has $4, so if the stock ever got above $4, of course you'd strike on that one too. So that way we actually had a successful offering because instead of just a share of stock, which sucked, you got a share of stock and you got these two chances like lottery tickets for something better down the road. We were able to raise the money and we didn't have to sell so much. Of course, down the road, the first warrant A struck. Warrant A, the company got to about 230, 235, and Warrant A was striking all over the place, and that was near dilution. That nearly took the insiders out of majority position right there and then. But there you are. That's how that works. So you have these animals that are part of stock. Now, also, by the way, warrants come in two flavors: detachable, non-detachable, and detachable. The ones in this offering were detachable. Non-detachable, you're not allowed to pull those off and sell those separately. Detachables, you can pull the warrant off and sell it on its own to someone else who might be interested in it. So there are different flavors of these. But know this, what I'm trying to get to, and I didn't mean to get into quite that much detail on how a warrant works, is that there is common stock that is equity. But there are also these animals out there that are like pre-equity, if for lack of a better term. And they are related to common stock in one way or another. So you might see things like warrants, options, ETFs. Know that that is all stock. And behind it, there is stock somewhere. The idea that common stock can't possibly be something that is a company should issue. Well, look how many shares of common stock are issued every year. Look how many shares of common stock are traded every day. It's in the billions and billions. It is a huge market, and no matter how long time goes on, no matter how many academics write about how it just doesn't make any sense for companies to be issuing common stock unless they're in real trouble and they can't get debt. No, common stock is still sort of the American way because we all want to be owners of the corporations that we invest in. And common stock is how you do it, and you can do it through a couple of other methods. If you don't want to step straight into it, like ETFs, you can do those too. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.